Are you curious about neurodivergence in the tech industry, especially in cybersecurity? On this episode of Textual Talk, join host HD with special guest Quentin to dive deep into the unique experience of navigating tech while being on the autism spectrum. You'll hear firsthand from Quentin, who shares his journey from growing up in a Title I school, overcoming albinism and masking, to breaking into cybersecurity and thriving in corporate America. The conversation uncovers the challenges and strengths neurodivergent professionals face, tips for landing that first tech role, and how to advocate for yourself in the workplace. Whether you're neurodivergent, know someone who is, or simply want to understand how diversity enriches cybersecurity, this episode will help inspire you to embrace what makes you different and turn into your greatest advantage. Tune in today and discover what it really takes to succeed in tech while you're true to yourself. Ready to learn, grow, and stay textual? Let's get into it.
This video will be sponsored by SNHU. So it's 2025 and cybersecurity is still all the rage. Breaches are at an all-time high and so are cyber salaries. But there's a problem you keep running into. Cyber jobs you want to land are requiring a degree and you don't have one. Let me introduce you to today's sponsor, Southern New Hampshire University, SNHU. SNHU has a flexible online program that also touts one of the lowest tuitions in the country. SNHU is an affordable, accredited, nonprofit university that has dedicated career advisors, webinars, internships, and more to prepare you to enter or advance in the workforce. There's a 32% projected growth of information security analyst roles through 2032, and according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, the median security analyst salary in 2023 was $120,000. In SNHU's program, you can learn about these critical subjects: cybersecurity foundations, networking, incident response, risk management, enterprise security, and more. As a cybersecurity professional, these are all important courses. If you would like to know more about SNHU's program, then please visit snhu.edu/textual or click the link below in the description.
Could you give like a brief introduction about who you are and a little bit about your background?
My name is Quentin Shelton. I am 26 years old. I have two degrees. I have a computer programming degree, and then I also have a information technology degree. I am autistic. I was diagnosed at 3 years old. I basically started at a Title I school, and that was like, when I say a Title I school, that's like a school that's located in like a lower income area that don't really get money from, they just get money from the government. They don't get money from like the local businesses and stuff like that. So I started off in a Title I school. After I graduated, I didn't really get any type of scholarships or anything like that. So I pretty much had to essentially get it out the mud. Most of the time I made my money from just getting like the financial aid, which was like the Pell Grant. And then they also had like a scholarship with the Georgia Lottery, which was called HOPE. So basically, if you graduated with like a 3.0, they would pay for like the tuition, but they wouldn't pay for anything else. So you had to come up with the money for the books, the incidentals like laptops, transportation, and that's stuff. In spite of that, I got my associate's degree in 2019, and then I immediately started inside of the tech industry with an internship. My first internship was with Fulton County Government. And I worked on a project called PC Refresh. And the purpose of that project was basically with an operating system, operating system has like a life cycle. And with government, they're pretty much slow on like upgrading their operating systems. And at the time, it was Windows 8.1 that they had on their systems, but it was finna go be decommissioned. And they told them basically by 2020, if you guys don't have your systems upgraded, you guys are going to have to pay us every single day that you guys have these machines on the network. Because whenever our operating system is no longer getting updates, it poses as a security risk. So my job was basically to go in. We use a software called Bellark, and it would scan all the softwares on the computer. And then we would go in, scan the softwares that's on the computer, do asset management, and then basically upgraded from Windows 8.1 over to Windows 10. So that was pretty much like my intro into the tech scene. After getting into my internship, I decided to like continue my education, and that's when I went over to Kennesaw State. And when I went over to Kennesaw State, I decided not to stay in a dorm. I decided to stay inside of a student apartment just so I could have more freedom and stuff like that, because in a dorm, you don't necessarily have privacy and everything like that. And 3 months into me moving in, COVID started and everything like that. And a lot of people struggled during COVID, but for myself, I felt like it was like a reflection period. It gave me time to apply for grants and stuff like that. It gave me time to do like job shadowings, and a lot of job shadowings were like remote at the time. And then eventually I did get a position, a student assistant position at Kennesaw State, where inside of IT. And at that time, like I said, government places are slow, but at the time, Kennesaw State and a lot of other universities were scared, because they were just like, oh my gosh, we're not going to be in the classroom and stuff like that. So my job was basically like to get the systems and stuff together for it to be digital. And that was like a process in itself. Like I did, they had a $5 million, helped them with their $5 million iPad project. And my role was to basically do the asset management, make sure that the image was installed on it, and make sure that those devices were distributed. Along with that, my job was also to do like classroom sweeps. So I would check the projectors, I would check the web connection inside of like the classrooms and stuff to make sure that everything was good, because the way they had it is like half of the people would come into class, the other half would be online. So I would make sure that the technologies and stuff for the web students were good. I would make sure that the students who did not have internet at home had routers, because they gave them routers as well. So that's a little bit of like how I kind of like got started into tech.
Man, that was a lot, man. Thank you for that. I want to go back to, and of course you don't remember all this stuff, because like I said, I think a lot of the things, I think when we first talked a couple of months ago, you reminded me of some of the stuff that I've kind of been through with my daughter. I mean, she's only 5, but I think we got her diagnosed around at 3 as well. And I wonder why 3 is that number when they decide to diagnose. And I know it's slightly different now. I think that they have more research. And so that's why, you know, they base these spectrums and severities. And I think it was different types that you can have. I could be wrong on that, but I believe it's different types. And I know when I was in elementary, technically the only people that they may consider to be autistic would be maybe more severe cases versus kids who weren't as severe. They might have had them at least have an IEP and maybe put them like in special education classes, but they possibly wouldn't be deemed to be autistic possibly back then. That's kind of just from my experience. But how was, or you can go back to the earliest memory you could think of, maybe like elementary, middle school, about knowing you had like a disability, and how was going to school for you? I guess that's what I would say. Like, how was school for you outside of it being like, you know, in a low income area? How was it?
I can say as like going to school for me was like, I always knew I had to work harder. Like when I was in kindergarten, they pretty much did not know what to do with me. Like when I was in kindergarten, like some half of the day I would spend in small group, and then the other half I would spend with like the general educational people. And I remember when I was like younger, I was always an inquisitive child. So I was just like, I'm tired of just being pulled from this direction, pulled to this direction. They ask me like, what are you going to want? What do you want to do? Do you want to be in the small group or do you want to be in a general education? And I was just like, I want to be with everybody else. I want to be in the general educational classes. And like, from that day, like my mom and my dad had a talk with me and they're just like, you're going to have to work harder than like everybody else and everything like that. And I had strengths and then I also had weaknesses. Like my first like couple of years, I struggled with like reading comprehension. And like to this day, like for me, the way I learned how to read was not traditional. Like they had me like sound out the words. And sounding out the words doesn't make sense to me. So the way I like read is like basically like I hear the word, they had me write it down, and I would just use my muscle memory in order to like learn the words and stuff like that. And then my mom got me like this tool. It was called like a spelling dictionary. So I would type in the word and then it would like tell me how to say the word. And then it'll also tell me what the word means. So like it would be a lot of that. And then at the time they had something called a Leapster. And with the Leapster, basically it made learning kind of fun. And for me, I'm kind of like a virtual learner. I learn by practicability. That's why I'm good at like technology, because technology is not theory. You're actually doing. The worst thing you can do in technology is break it. But you, after a certain amount of trials, you can like rebuild it. So with mathematics, though, I succeeded. Even when I was in kindergarten, I couldn't read, but I was the only kid up in there that could count to 100. So with like when it came to school, elementary school, I struggled. When I came to middle school, I started to get it together. The thing I struggled with the most was like time management. For myself, if I'm interested in a task, I would just like focus on that one specific task and everything would go to the wayside. So like, what my mom used to do was she would put planners inside the house and the planners would be virtual. And, what she'll do is she'll get like a poster and then like she'll get these like hints of sticky things. And then once I have a task done, I'll move it over to the other side. And then when I'm on the computer, we had two types of computers. We had like a home computer and then I had my own personal computer. And for fun time, my mom would get like on the microwave and there'll be like a timer on the microwave and she's like, you have this much time for playtime and then the rest of the time you're going to like study. And my mom was always like on my butt. She was like, I'm going to be on you like water and rice. So like once I got into like high school, I pretty much got it together with time management and everything like that. I was in clubs. I was in FBLA, which is Future Business Leaders of America. I was in Beta Club. I was in Chess Club. Am I leaving anything out? I was in a National Technical Honor Society. And then later on, I was even in the top 10% in the class. There was just like a lot of the school that I went to was very ableistic. I remember when I was in high school and at 16 years old, they in fact told me that you can go to college and do the dual enrollment. And dual enrollment is like you're in high school, but you can take college classes. And I was just like excited, but like they basically told my mom like if he does this program and everything like that, then he's basically gonna lose his accommodations and stuff like that. So he can either stay in this like program and he can basically stay in this program or he can go to do the dual enrollment and basically like lose his accommodations and stuff. And at the time there wasn't like how it is now, like you got TikTok, you got IG and everything like that. So now if that happened, people would be like, go on Instagram. People would do stuff and be like, this is discrimination. I'm going to sue the Board of Education and stuff like that. And it wasn't like a whole bunch of like information. My mom was like very educated. She had 2 degrees like myself, but the information and stuff wasn't out there like it is like now. So it would be that. And then in school, I would say like I chose the math, like because I knew if I did not math, I would get bullied. So like so in school and stuff like that, I was more or less like neurotypical passing. Most people did not know that I had a learning disability because I didn't make it visible and everything like that. And I saw, and it was like I was fearful too because I saw what would happen. I saw what happened to the people who basically couldn't cover up their disabilities. If you ever watch X-Men and you see like the mutants that could cover up their powers, how they got treated versus the ones whose powers were way more apparent. You had those you had the Sentinels and stuff coming for them, throwing them in jail and stuff like that. It was like the same same instance. And it was sometimes I would deal with ableism, but most of the time I would deal with ableism from the like teachers and not the students most of the time.
Wow, man. that's deep. You got a very good memory. You said a lot. I think one of the things I want to ask you is, were you also, so I don't know if you're on Twitter or X as it's called now, there's this thing where it was like a year or two ago, a lot of people of us, whereas a lot of us probably it's like undiagnosed or whatever we have going on, but we realized a lot of the kids that were gifted, they were either in the Gateway or the Discoveries, end up to be diagnosed with something later on in life. Were you in any of those programs, like a Gateway or Discoveries or anything?
That's funny that you asked that. When I was in fifth grade, I got the third highest math score in the whole entire school. And the next year, my mom was prepping me. I was reading books and stuff. My mom always took me to the library every 2 weeks. And I would get like the computer books. My mom was like, no, you need to get this book. And one book in particular that I read was The Watsons Go to Birmingham. And I was crying reading that book because, like, again, I had like a learning disability. So that side of my brain did not like register. So I would be crying literally reading that book. And then they placed me into like gifted classes and everything like that. And I didn't even last like a whole entire week because it was the same situation with the dual enrollment. They basically told my mom, oh, he can't be gifted and special needs at the same time. And we now know that it's called twice exceptional, but they didn't use that like vocabulary. And I was just disappointed. And like my mom had told me, before I even went to school, my mom went to took me to Starbucks that morning. And then she basically like, in short, she cursed the counselor out. The counselor couldn't even give her eye contact. And she's like, basically was just like, don't have me come up to the school again. Yeah. So basically I was just put back into like mainstream like classes, but I was put into gifted, but they took me out because I had an IEP basically.
I think that's some of that stuff has changed because I don't think people, they don't really understand these things, but if people really do their research, a lot of the more brilliant minds are probably somewhere on the spectrum. It's because of the way that they see things, whether it's in technology or music or arts or whatever, they have a certain thing that they can do, and that's the reason why they can do it. But that doesn't mean that they can't also do something else. Because, and this is going back to what I said when I was younger, more so if somebody said, somebody was like, you made the greatest analogy about X-Men. You had a Mystique, or you had Scott or Jean Grey, even, you know, Wolverine to an extent. Like, they can walk around, people may think they're normal people. So back then, you know, somebody like you, they may say, oh, this person's not on the spectrum. Whereas if you see a severe person like a Beast or a Nightcrawler or anybody else that just looks a certain way, you've seen them with a visible disability or they did nothing but STEM, you would say, okay, I know that they're on the spectrum. And I think that's what people are trying to compare to. It's like, there's no way we can let this person do this and do this, because they can't grasp the fact that, hey, people don't learn the same. And I think not to even go on a tangent, because like I'm a parent now, so everything I guess I can say I internalize or look at it different when I'm listening to people talk about school or something with their kids. School has pretty much been taught the same way for years. That's the one of the things I talked to my mom about. She teaches like in a 4-year-old program, and I talk about how they try to teach boys the same way they teach girls, and we learn vastly different. Vastly different. They'll try to say you're bad because you want to move around and do things, but honestly, it may only take you 30 minutes to 60 minutes to get that lesson for the whole day. You don't need to be there the whole time sitting down. Your boy's supposed to be running around and playing and getting tired, not sitting down at the desk and having to do this. And I think that's one of the real issues why you have people disinterested, or boys disinterested in learning or school, because of the way that it's taught. That's not what they gravitate towards. And then that starts the ripple effect of, oh, this kid is bad, or now he just wants to sit still and all this other stuff. Meanwhile, the whole time, most of the time, he's just a boy. And then you start going into, they have being diagnosed with stuff, and are you making sure that the teachers are actually abiding by the IEP and giving them the help that they need? All those different things, man. It's just weird, in my opinion.
Yeah, I remember when I was in community college one day, and I took a public speaking class, and I was just like, basically the K-12 system is basically flawed, because we talk about neuroplasticity, and we talk about how the brain is more suggestible to change when a child is from like 5, maybe all the way into 14 years old. And I had said, instead of having K-12, let's have vocational schools where we're able to like learn trades. So after the child gets out of high school, they already have that plumbing certification. They already have that welding certification. They already have that cooking certification. So not only do they have a high school thing, but they can actually come out and have real world skills, and they're not trying to figure out like, oh my God, who am I? Who am I? Yeah. How I'm going to provide off of myself and everything like that. So, and a lot of us do learn practically. When I first started my internship, I remember even though I did like PC refresh and I did like technician stuff, some days I would go upstairs and I would talk to the programmers and web developers, and I would learn in 1 hour. I would learn way more than I learned in 3 freaking semesters. And I was sometimes able to take that knowledge over to the university.
No doubt. I mean, and I'm trying to pinpoint what you just said about, oh, the trades. So ironically, that's kind of how school used to be set up. Like my dad, technically he's a boomer. So he's what, 61, 62 now, but when they were in school, you had, you know, like auto body, you had wood shop welding, you had cooking, you had all these different things, because they would help you learn how to do trades. That's what all the electives were about. You had all these different electives, and those electives kind of could sway you and say, okay, I want to do this when I get out of school. That doesn't really exist now, like you said. I think I don't know if it's still happening now. I know like one of my younger brothers, he is 21. When he was in high school, we all went to the same high school where they went years after I went. But he was able to take woodshop or not. I can't remember. But my school was like the only school in our parish. And for people that don't know, Louisiana doesn't have counties that have parishes, but a parish is just like a county. It's the only school in that parish that had woodshop still. And the teacher that taught it taught me, taught my dad, taught a lot of my cousins. But we did woodshop and welding there, but that didn't really exist throughout the city. And so that's when you had the push, which I think is, you know, another marketing ploy to get people to go to school, because honestly, everybody wasn't meant to go to school. It was really supposed to be the best of the best went to college, not, hey, go to college just because you don't have anything else to do. So then you send people not do good the first semester because they were never supposed to be there to begin with, to be totally honest. So it's a world for both. It's a world for trades. It's a world for schools, everything in between. But now I want to focus on, I know you said by the time you got to high school, you got it together. I want to ask you this too. because I know this is one of the things that sometimes people on the spectrum deal with. Well, two things. I want to harken back to the masking part. And I guess that's also something I'll ask you later on about masking when it comes to work. But socially, how did you feel going to school? Outside of the masking thing, like, did you feel like you were okay? At least, I won't even go as far as saying like making friends. I'll say like at least like having conversations with people and talking to them back and forth. How was that for you?
It was good. It was like good to a certain degree, but like sometimes like I wouldn't like always like catch on to like the like jokes and like body language and stuff like that with people. And then for myself, like I was like a late bloomer. So when I came into high school, I still looked like an elementary schooler. So that played a part. Like people sometimes would be like Mickey Mouse and everything like that, because like my voice and stuff didn't really come in until like 16, 17 years old. So like most of the time I would just be looked at like, you know how you have the mom be like, take your little brother out, da 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 da, and they don't really be wanting to take like the little brother out, where they just like deal with them.
Mm-hmm.
That would be kind of like be me. Like I would, when it came to like to jokes and everything like that, I did know how to roast and stuff like that because like of the household I came into. Like my mom was sarcastic, my dad was like a sailor mouth. So like when people like used to like try to roast me and stuff like that, I would have like what they call like the clapbacks and stuff like that. I even gave people names and stuff like that sometimes. Like,
So this is something I used to do. I want to know if you did it too. You're sitting back and observing, and people don't believe it, but I definitely am. I'm definitely a good roaster. I had to learn how to roast. I wore glasses from the age of like 4 to 25. My family, we never had like, you know, cool cars, vans and stuff, and where I grew up. So I always, you know, I had to defend against the jokes. But I will always have, I'm observing everybody. I'll say, okay, if they ever say this joke to me, this is going to be the joke I say back. Did you have that ready for them?
Yeah, I already had like a reserve. I was just like, if they say this to me, I'm going to say this, and I'm going to say it like in the most like funniest like voice ever. Like it'll be sometimes where like, I remember it was like this one, I was like in like an upper, I was an elective, but sometimes they had like upperclassmen, and like I would always used to like hang out with the upperclassmen. And one day it was this dude who like said like this, who was just like roasting me or whatever. And I was just like, all right, coffee bean. And then like everybody in the classroom just started laughing. And then like after that, like he was just trying to like dab me up and stuff like that. But like I would always have like jokes for people, and sometimes I always had jokes for people. Like one time it was like this person who had said something to me, and I was just like, okay, gator mouth. And then like everybody in the whole entire like school started calling her that name and everything like that. Like for me I always like I'm a very like observer, so I just like look at somebody, I just be like, okay, I'm taking mental notes of this just in case. Cause like, again, like growing up, I was like short. To this day, I'm still small frame, but like I was like short, skinny. I didn't have like the flyest gear. Like I had sometimes went to school with starters, which is like Walmart shoes. We had like uniform, but like some people had like the polo, the Levi's, the True Religion and stuff like that. I had none of that. So, people sometimes would just think like I was just like an easy target. And then like once they realized like I was an easy target, somebody would just like look at me and they'll just be like, oh yeah, he crazy.
Yeah, that's good, man. I'll be trying to, in so many ways, like what you described about the household is kind of like the dynamic at home. And so my 5-year-old, I'm only trying to say, hey, if she say this back to him or whatever. So I'm trying to give her ammunition so she can be prepared for whenever she's at school. Really, all of them. I'm trying to teach all of them the different ways, because it was definitely fun and interesting. I went to school with some guys who probably should have been in, when if I was in middle school, they should have been in high school, and vice versa. But you live and learn. I think I think roasting in the black community is a temp check. Somebody trying to see, like, all right, is you black? Is you down? Like, can you roast? Like, people, I think that's the one of the things that they're trying to do. It's one of the reasons why we probably can excel in any environment, because we always got to be quick on our feet anyway. Something always happening.
I had to turn that off, like, when I got into, like, I said, once I, like, get to this environment here, I'm going to, like, turn it down. But sometimes it still come out.
Yeah. I mean, you just got to find out how to do it in different ways. So typically it's, like, through emails or some type of jargon, or it's sarcastic, like you said. So, okay, but now we are now into the process of... I'm assuming that you chose your first major because your mom had you reading all those computer books, right?
So yeah, I was always interested in computers, even when I was like younger. Like, they don't even have them no more. Like, it's obsolete, but like, I used to play with like the CD little drive that was on the computer. Because like I would do, again, my parents would have me like do like the little educational things. And then like, when I'd be like, when they would pull me out, they would have me do the little thing. So it was like Reader Rabbit. It was like a couple of others that they had me on. So like, I was always interested in the computer. I would be sometimes fixing it. I would like, when the computer came on, like XP, like dun 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 dun. So I always was interested in it. And like, the funny thing is, like, I struggle with like reading, but like, when my mom would take me to the library, like, she couldn't even take me to the library in like Clayton County, because it was like a black section and they talk about like zip lining. So like, the books were out of date. So my mom would take me to the next county over. And when I went to the kids section of the library, the books were kind of like lower level. So I would actually have to go to the adult section, and I would read like, I don't know if you're familiar with the dummy books. Like, I would, read the dummy books, and I'll actually have like DOS, if you're familiar with DOS. Like, I would like put in the commands for that. I would be doing like the little C++. I would be doing stuff where, if I don't know if you're familiar with batch. So batch is basically like how you can make the kernels in the computer do stuff. So I'll make like the keys light up on the computer. I would do like launchers on my phone. Back in the day, if you're familiar with jailbreaking, I would do like the Cydia. So like,
yeah, that was the,
I already
the
knew
of iPhone, when everybody was getting iPhones, the jailbreaks was like always the new jailbreak was coming out.
So yeah, I even found a way to like jailbreak my phone without Cydia. It was called a semi jailbreak. And with a semi jailbreak, what you would do is you would go on like this website and you would download something on your computer, and then you'll basically put like a certificate on your phone. And like the same way you put a VPN on your phone, yep, you'll put like profile, a little like, you'll put like a little profile on your phone. And like, I used to have like the Snapchat Plus, where like I could save people's Snapchats. I could go on Snapchat and watch somebody's Snapchat, and they wouldn't even know that I watched it.
Yeah.
It got to the point where like, I don't know what kind of mechanism that they had on like Snapchat, but it got to the point where Snapchat actually messaged me, and they were just like, you can't, you need to like delete. They were nice about it. They're just like, you need to like delete this by this date, or we're going to like ban your account.
Yeah. They were doing the same thing when I used to have, well, I still got an Android phone now, but back when I used to have Snapchat, they had all these different third-party apps you can download. So it's the same thing. And that was the main reason why I went to Android. It was like, I don't even got a jailbreak. I could just sideload apps.
So yeah, I was interested in computers. I still have this idea in my head. Like, when I went to school, and before I even knew about the tech industry for real, my idea, I used to watch Shark Tank, and I still sometimes do. I was just like, I'm going to invent a program. I'm going to learn how to do this so I can like invent my program. When I was like, was taking programming classes, they only would teach us so much. And I was just like, and there would be certain sections that our professor wouldn't like show us. So I would go to the office hours and I'd be like, how do I make a graphic user interface? And then by the end of the semester, it wasn't even an assignment. Like, I just went to, I just went on YouTube, typed in this dude called The New Boston, and then he showed me how to make a graphic user interface using Java. It was called using Java Swing and then Java FX. And a lot of people don't know about graphic user interfaces. You actually use CSS, which is basically what you use to design a website. You can also use that to make a graphic user interface. So like, yeah, I was like definitely into like computers. Like I used to like get into it with my brother for the Wired magazines. I still have the Wired magazines in like my apartment right now because some of them are collectibles.
See, I never had those magazines. I was more so into, I used to get the Game Informers and like the Nintendo Power. I used to get those magazines. Then eventually I graduated to getting like, what's those magazines? Men's Health, the Men's Health joints. I never had any of the tech ones. Oh, Jet. Did y'all have Jet magazines at home?
I never got the Jet ones, but I did get the Game Informer ones, and I also got the IGN ones, I believe. And then there was like another one. I want to say it's gonna be on the tip of my head. JQ magazines, and I used to get those because it used to have like the little cologne, little samples that you could just like scratch and rub.
Okay. Cool. Now, so the first major, that's the one that you did the community college at, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right. I want to talk about, because you did the PC reset refresh going into Kennesaw State, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So let's talk about some fun stuff. So when y'all did the PC refresh, I know you told me the tool that y'all used to scan all the applications, but were all the endpoints, were they all the same OS? Or what? Were they much more like, you know, XP and like Windows Vista, Windows 7? Like what type of operating system did those computers have on it, if you remember?
A lot of the endpoints were on Windows 8.1. I don't remember any of them being... I'm going to take that back because when I was doing the Fulton County government, that one was interesting because when I first started, they actually had to like take my fingerprints during like inboarding, because what ended up happening was like, I wouldn't even just go to that specific building, the Fulton County government building, but I actually had to go across all the sites that's in Fulton County, that's associated to Fulton County. So libraries, behavior health places, water plants, anything that was associated with Fulton County, we had to go to. So it was laptops, it was like tablets, it was like workstations. There was like some workstations that were like so sensitive where we would have to take the laptops over from their site over to our site, and we would go into like this data room. And basically, like, they would, like, put the computer into, like, BIOS. And basically, they would run a script on it, and then they would do something with the DHP. Because some of the computers on there, the reason why we ran the Bellark in the first place, because we wanted to make sure that it had the same image on the computer. When I mean image, it mean, like, when you're working on a computer sometimes, like... And you have an image, basically you all the icons are going to be in the same place. If the software doesn't work, if there's like a software that is not compatible with the next operating system, we would have to like do a hot fix in order for that specific software to work. Yeah, there was like, I think it was like a couple of computers that were on XP. And the reason why they were on XP was because sometimes what you have sometimes with a system is, that's why we have Dockers now, or we have That's another word for Dockers, but the reason why some computers don't run on XP because that computer would be like a software host for the other computers.
No, perfect, perfect, perfect. Now, I want to switch gears and ask you something too. What made you want to get into cybersecurity?
So what made me want to get into cybersecurity? It was like more or less me pivoting. Like I actually wanted to be a programmer, but with the way the market was, it was just like, the only way I was going to be a programmer is if I had like 15 years of experience, and like, I was not going to have 15 years of experience. And then at my job at Kennesaw State, when I was working at service desk, we used to do like a whole bunch of stuff. Like, most people want to demoralize help desk, but in my role, we did a lot more than traditional help desk. Like at my job, we managed over 45,000 endpoints. That would be Apple. That would be the smart computers there. That would be Windows and other platforms as well. So I would do Active Directory. I would do MDM, which is mobile device management. And we would use Jamf. And Jamf is just like for Apple. And that had like security provisions on that. We would do like stuff like BitLocker. I even got cross-trained at one point by the cybersecurity team. So I would do stuff with Splunk. And I'll also do stuff with email security. And with the email security, what would happen is a user would like get an email, and when they were reported to phishing, mm-hmm. it would go over to this other platform called KnowBefore. And basically what KnowBefore is, it's like a sandbox that like scans and assesses those emails, and basically it pulls the DMARC off of it and DMK, and I would look and see if it passed the handshake. I would look at the JSON and see if it like does the handshake and stuff like that. We would do like FERPA. So sometimes I would go into Splunk. I would look and see how many times a user, if the user is logging in from the right place, are they logging into a Federation service? Are they logging into an LDAP service? What is the user agent? So I realized that I was already doing stuff in mm-hmm. cybersecurity. And I just exploited that loophole. I just like, I don't have the title for it, but I'm already low-key already doing stuff in cybersecurity. I just don't have the title. So one day I was like doom scrolling on like LinkedIn. You already know how that goes. I was just looking at like people's like titles, looking mm-hmm. at like certain things. And somebody in my network had posted a job for a cybersecurity position, and they mentioned like they need experience in SIM, they need experience in a couple other things. I was like, I am using SIM, I'm using Splunk, I am doing email security. So what I did was I just took those like keywords, and on my resume, I just took the help desk out my resume. That's the first thing. Just eliminated that and changed it over to IT analyst. And then I just put in the things that were cybersecurity. So two-factor authentication. We also did PIIs, which is personal identifiable information, and ServiceNow. So sometimes I would go and redact that. I just put in everything that was like mm-hmm. cybersecurity, and then also maybe listed one or two things that I actually did in help desk just to like balance it out. Cause if you put too much fluff up in there, they're going to like know something's up. So I did that. I sent it over to the person who actually put the title in, and then basically they referred me. And then 2 weeks later, I got like a call from the VP of the company. And they were just like, they were just like surprised that I knew stuff about Federation service, user agents, DMARC, handshakes and stuff like that. he liked me. They passed me over to the specific team, and they were just like surprised that I also knew how like different services work, because at my job, also manage 200 different softwares. And sometimes like I'm the type of person that's very like agitatious. So instead of it passing off a task to the server team or enterprise team, I would try to like help them. And even if it wasn't like a good fix, I call it hot fix. So I would give them a temporary solution, document everything, and then be like, this is what they have going on. So basically, like, they were impressed that I knew how to improvise when systems and stuff would go wrong. So they liked me and everything like that. And then they later extended me an offer.
Yeah. Now, let me ask you about interviewing. Let me ask you about even applying to jobs. When you apply to jobs, do you list that you have a disability or you don't?
When I was like, that's funny that you asked that. When I was like younger, when I was like 18, 19, I was trying to like get into like the workforce, just basic like blue collar stuff. I used to be like, I have a disability, da 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 da. And then that would kind of like shoot me in the foot. So I learned not to disclose that on my resume, not on my work application. Mm-hmm. So I'd be like, when they would ask me, there would be an option when you're doing an application, you can be like, yes, no, or I choose not to disclose. I choose not to disclose. And then once I get into the door, mm-hmm. that's when I tell them I have a disability, because you can't like fire me or for having a disability.
Yeah, no, I'm saying this. I wanted to ask that because I think there may be some people that struggle with it and they wonder like, well, why nobody called me back? I know I can do the work, you know, because that is a part of DEI. Like, so much stuff where they just try to make DEI be about Black people, but no, it's about much more than that. It's anybody that's like a minority, people with disabilities that you're trying to say can't do a job when obviously they can, you know, but those disabilities come like different perks or whatever. Like, you know, some people don't like to be on a camera, you know, based on their disability, what they have. Hey, I don't have to be on camera, or I can't do this or whatever, or I need to manage a smaller team. It's like, you know, just different things that'll help out, because people will try to be unfair to you unless they realize, oh, okay, hey, this person operates a little bit differently, but they know exactly how to do the job. Or let's take it a step further. In past interviews, have you ever struggled with answering questions that weren't specific, like, they ask you something that's like open-ended, or they don't know the way how to ask you what they want to actually ask you? And so you're like, what are you talking about? Or I don't know that.
So I used to be suck at interviews. I'm not going to like sugarcoat that. But when I went to Kennesaw, used to have a program. They have a really good career program. So during the day before their job fairs, you actually get to sit down with their recruit. They would actually bring like recruiters from the industry, and you could actually sit down, talk to them in practice. And then they also had like mock interviews and stuff like that, where you could actually like practice. And like, I remember when I was, it was like 2021, and I would get to the first and second round, and I wouldn't wonder why, like, I wouldn't get like that last like offer. And every 2 weeks, I would go and talk to my career advisor, and she would just give me like tips. One of the main tips that she had like told me was like scripting. And with scripting, you kind of just like write down the questions that you think they're going to ask you. And so you kind of like don't be like, I don't know. And then another thing that they taught me was STAR. And STAR is basically like situation, task, action, and result. Mm-hmm. So whenever there will be a time when like an interviewer went in, like I wouldn't understand the interviewer, I'd be like, I would state back the sentence to them. I'd be like, can I please get more clarity about this? Versus I don't know, or trying to take an educated guess.
Yeah, no, that's actually a good thing to ask for, because it's one of the things that actually grade on, are you getting clarity? Are you paying attention to detail when somebody asks you a question? And so so that's great. And so the role that you just told me about when you got extended the internship, is that the same role now that you do full time?
What do you mean?
When you said you switched from doing like the help desk stuff and then they were amazed at all different stuff you did, did that internship turn into a full-time?
When I was working at Kennesaw State, I was originally student assistant, and then I went to another, I worked as a contractor at Zillow, and then I came back to Kennesaw State as a full-time, and then when I took that offer for the cybersecurity job, that was me jumping from one full-time job to another.
Got you. Okay. I'm glad I got that clarified. And so in your current role, what's your day-to-day like?
My day-to-day, most of the time I would first open up my laptop. I will look at the they have like a chat.
Yeah.
So I look at like the regular chat, tell everybody good morning, and then we have like if there's something bad going on, we have something called like a war room. Mm-hmm. And I would look at that, and then I will also go into we have two things. We have a SOAR room, and that's where like all of the stuff is automated, and you will kind of like look at the alerts, and then you also have like a SIM background, which kind of like breaks down everything. And then certain days I would be doing like help, some day depending on what the day is, I'll just be doing that, and then some days I'll be running health checks. And basically, like, if you don't know, like a health check is basically like you just basically like checking the like deployments that's going on. So you're gonna look at like this deployment, see if it's getting, if everything is getting ingested. If are there too much stuff getting ingested? When I say too much stuff getting ingested, sometimes you have something called noise, and noise are just like repeat alerts that haven't been like tuned out. So you have that. You during the health checks, and then if it's like something that is like out of the ordinary, I would just alert like a like engineer, and then the engineer reach out to the client, do something remote, and then figure out what is going on. But that's typically like my like day to day as like a cybersecurity analyst.
Okay. And what type of, so are you still using Splunk?
I can't go into the tools that we use, because they did make me sound like an NDA, so I can't go too much into it. But we do use a query like language, multiple query languages to investigate logs and stuff.
Okay, I'll read in between the lines for that, or what I believe you guys could use. Let's see. Won't press on that. Let me ask you this. Have you worked, and like I said, this is all at a high level, right? It's not specifics on like whatever endpoint or domain they hit, but have you got a chance to work any like cool incidents?
Yes. So I remember like without saying too much, I remember one time there was like a data breach. And I would have to like look at like the logs and distinguish whether it was like a random IP or whether it was like a IV6 thing. And then it would just be like a, how can I say it without saying it?
I'll help you out. We'll dress it up as saying like it's incident, and you're trying to see if it's a regular IPv4, IPv6, and then you're probably looking at it with like some OSINT to see if it's malicious or not.
Yeah, so I would do a little bit of that. I would do a little bit of like the data. Well, not data, but threat analysis to see, mm-hmm. like, the most of the time when, like, attacks are inevitable. When an attack happens, most of the time, what we're trying to do, I work more of like blue purple team. So what we try to do most of the time, if like an attack happens, we're trying to mitigate it. We're trying to like see, we have like a tool that can, without me saying too much, we have data management, data recovery things where we can like roll certain stuff back. What can be rolled back? What cannot be rolled back? How did attack happen? Like a lot of times, what we're trying to figure out is why the attack happened.
Yeah.
Lessons.
Who was patient zero?
And the most interesting thing is like rolling things back. Lessons learned. Why did this happen? And how can we like mitigate stuff? How can we like mitigate it without like paying like a ransomware or something like that? Because a lot of people don't know that. A lot of people don't know the reason why cybersecurity is popular is because if I breach your system right now and you have important information in it, legally I can be like, I locked your stuff up, and if you don't pay me $2 million, it's gonna stay locked up. So our job is to be like, okay, it's like, this is like to be okay, this happened, but we already have a mechanism that's in place where we can roll this back. We can roll this back. We can roll this specific information back. We can roll this information back. How did this person even get into it? So like when that person is charging us that specific amount of money, they can't really charge it. How are you going to charge us money for something that we already kind of like recovered back? We may have lost, like, instead of us losing 100% of everything, we only lost like 30 or 20% of everything.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I think it's also worth to mention that just because you pay a ransom don't mean you're going to actually get your data back. So that's one of the ones to list. And I think also, this is where all the governance and stuff comes into play about what type of your risk acceptance is, and your, like you said, your backups, and how can you keep on doing business, or was the data critical to business? Is it prohibiting business, et cetera, et cetera? So all the people that make all those big decisions that are like, you know, the big wigs. Now, in your current role, do you get to do any cross collaboration with, like, you know, vulnerability management? Like you said, you already mentioned security engineers. What about like threat intelligence and GRC people? Like, do you send any calls with them? Or like maybe in the past incidents, that's when like everyone was in the bridge call, like kind of just talking and getting ideas, bouncing them off each other?
So yeah, I do like a little bit of like threat management. Where I would like look at something and then I'll do like an investigation on it. And then when it comes to like collaborations and stuff like that, I can say that when it comes to like my programming knowledge really comes in handy, because I can sometimes look at a log, or I can sometimes look at like a JSON file and be like, this doesn't look right, or I can basically see things that other people don't see. Like a lot of people who get into cyber sometimes don't understand how code works or how systems work. And I can sometimes come in and be like, let's do it like this. I see this inside of this JSON file that nobody sees. Let me take a screenshot of this and send it over to the team. When I'm working inside of different query languages, sometimes I'm able to put certain more things inside of the query language, even though it may take more time to get like a yield, like a better result. So like most of the time I try to leverage my like level of threat hunting and then programming knowledge when I'm working inside of the team, along with my customer service skills that I learned working in help desk.
Yeah, all those skills, they actually pay off. And I'm glad you said that. A lot of people don't understand how systems work, because I think that's one of the biggest things, especially being on a blue team, is so many people try to, they don't have to, I'm not going to say everybody has to do help desk, right? But you have to understand something. And it is a little bit easier to transition if you worked help desk where you know on the back end how these operations look when you're doing something versus just not understanding what you're looking at all. And you're trying and you're like struggling, like I'm probably like the most basic of things, or you're always trying to reach out to the end user. I see that all the time when I have these SOC analyst questions on my LinkedIn, people that say they want to work in the SOC. And I'm looking at all their answers that they say. And I was like, okay, you have not put in enough work to kind of understand what your job is being a SOC analyst. And it's really much to say, hey, do I have enough evidence that would say there's an incident or not? Not that I'm going to just reach out to everybody. I was like, if that's the case, they wouldn't need you to do the job. Based on what you have, what do you see? And then that's how you start going deeper to figure out what's actually happening. And that's why I recommend a lot of the newbies to get something like the Security Blue Team, Blue Team Level 1 certification. Because it's a practical exam and you can't just guess your way out of passing and getting the certification. You got to know what you're doing. And with that question, I'll follow up with, from a high level, then these could be domains or skills. Like I said, with the NDA, I know you can't say, you're not going to probably mention specific tooling. Or, I mean, if it's to an old job, you probably could. But in your opinion, what would be the top five skills someone would need in order to do a job like yours?
I would say the most like thing that you can do is like, I just like hate how people go on like the internet and be like, I'm Amazon. I'm just going to focus all on Amazon. No. Learn how Amazon works, but also learn how Microsoft works with Amazon. Learn how Google works with this specific software. Learn how they interact all together. So you're going to want to know the system and how all of the tools talk together. That is like one thing. And then another thing I would say most definitely is like having those soft skills. When you ask for help, you need to like help them help you. So when I'm asking for help most of the time, I just be like, this is already what I tried. This is what I see on my system. This is the reason why I'm coming up with this conclusion. I just need a second thought. And whatever field that you're going into, whether it's cybersecurity, AI, programming, you need to understand how all of them kind of like intertwine. Even if you're not a specialist, you need to understand, like, let's go just pretend like you're a app maker and you're making a program. You need to understand how memory, maybe need to understand how memory leaks work. Or if you're making a web app, you need to know about OSWeb, which is basically like cross-site scripting, SQL injections, man in the middle. You need to know how like all of those different things work. Like I say, the best thing for you, like in this industry, is not to be a master, but to be a jack of like all trades. Know how to read a technical manual. Know how to how integrations work across different things. Do labs, and then if you see a basic lab, build on top of it. It's okay sometimes to like go on GitHub and then take that person's work. Just make sure you give them credit and then be like, I took this person's thing, but I made it better. And this was the lessons learned when I did it. Like, and when you're like working and you like, even when you're in college, when you take answers, make sure you have documentation. Step by step by step. Documentation is going to be your best friend, because you may build a system 12 months from now and then a whole entire 2 years may go by and everything's going, but one day something goes wrong. And if you have that documentation and it's like step by step by step, that's going to be your saving grace.
Yeah, no, for real. I think a lot of people underrate documentation. And something else you said I liked was when you reach out to people, you don't just say, hey, I need some help. You say kind of what you've done and what you resourced to try to figure it out. And, you know, you're kind of stuck there. So they know, okay, you pretty much did everything I would tell you to do first before reaching out to me. A lot of people have it bad and they work in the SOC. It could be alert they don't understand. Instead of trying to actually do the basis of what would you do triaging it, you just took the alert, threw it in the email, and sent it over. And it's like, if that's the case, we can automate that if that's what you're going to do. And so I definitely appreciate you saying that. Now, I want to ask you, for other people who are on the spectrum, what type of advice would you have for them, you know, working in cybersecurity or just in corporate America in general? Like, how would you advise them to go about their job search journey?
When it came to my job search journey, like, I would say, like, don't get discouraged. And, like, I don't know how people are when it comes to faith, but, like, I believe in God and everything like that. And, like, for me, God gave me a vision and everything like that. And I was like, I'm going to, like, stick to this vision. I remember I was like, it was like my last couple of months of like school, and they so-called had job programs, but they weren't really like job programs and stuff like that. And I pretty much had to think outside the box. Like, they would have like job fairs at the school, mm-hmm. but it wouldn't really be like job fairs for like high demanding like skills. It'll more or less be like job fairs that you could pretty much get off the street, like jobs at Walmart, jobs at Home Depot, jobs at this place, that place. Yep. So eventually I was just like, for me, sometimes I just call cow manure, and I was just like, I went up to the president. They couldn't give me no answers. And then like, they had like a career, development place at the back of the school. So like, I would walk across the street like two or three times a week, and I know that those people got tired of me, but I would walk across like the street, and I'd be like, this is my resume. I also had labs and stuff at the time. I had a project where basically like I created a graphic user interface, and then I made a website that talk to that graphic user interface. So whenever somebody put something into that graphic user interface, it was send it over to the website. And then the website itself had like a pie chart, and the pie chart would get bigger or smaller based off of that. So I would just like do stuff. Like I would talk to the career development person. And then eventually he just remembered me, cause I just came up there so many times. I was like persistent. I was not taking like no as an answer. Like I knew the sky was the limit. So I wasn't too much taking like no as an answer. And when I did like kind of like break into the door, I always would request accommodations. Like, I remember one time when I first started that job at the time, it was like for Fulton County government. They had told me that we're going to drive you to each site because, again, at Fulton County government, we would go to libraries. We go to this. So they were assigned to take us to different sites. So it was this one day where this gentleman was like, oh, you're going to need to take the bus to get to this location or whatever. And I was like, but in the job title, it said transportation would always be provided by you guys. And it was people there that was looking at me crazy and everything like that. But I pretty much made sure I stood up for my rights there. And I just, and then somebody else, it got to the point where somebody else was just like, this is discrimination and stuff. And then when that D word came in, folks started to act right. So I would say like, make sure that you stand up for yourself, even if people try to like gaslight you or try to make it seem like you're crazy for asking for accommodations. If once you get accepted into a role, and they don't try to properly accommodate for you, that is classified as discrimination. And a place, any place that you work at that is like corporate, whether it's private, they don't want a they don't want anything with discrimination.
Oh yeah,
so I would say always like stand up for yourself when you're working. For me, like even after I got the job at Fulton County Government and I was a student assistant at Kennesaw State and I wanted something better at the time. Because when I was a student assistant at Kennesaw State, they were paying me like minimum wage. And I was like, okay, I want something better. I applied for, I'm going to be real with y'all. I applied 50 times to places. I will have an interview every single week. I started in January. I didn't get an offer until April. So I would say like, stay persistent, stay on your guns, and use your different platforms. Like for me, I just didn't just apply. Like I would apply. After I would apply, I would like get the email of whoever was the recruiter. I would send them an email. I was at a good school, so I would like go to the career office. I leveraged LinkedIn, and that's how I really got my offer for Zillow, through LinkedIn. Like LinkedIn was different in 2021, 2022. So like I would like leverage my LinkedIn. I would leverage my connections at the school. I would leverage my connections on another platform called Handshake. And if you're in college, you can use a platform called Handshake. And that's pretty much where like all of the colleges unionize together, and they'll give you offers, just not in your area, but just around the United States. So I would say like, when you're applying for jobs, do not put all of your eggs in one basket. Have multi different facets. So if this way is not going good, you can go on this way. If this way is not going good, you can have this way. And then what always kind of happens for me is like, once I get that one job offer, I get like two or three job offers out of nowhere. Yep. It always happens. So I would say like, maximize like your opportunities through that. If you gotta like practice in the mirror through your thing, for me, I would script, meaning like I would get a journal and I would practice what I'm gonna say. Like when I would email recruiters, what I would do is like I would go to the career office and they would help me with this one script. And what I would do is I would email the recruiter with the same script, but I would just change one or two words together and I would just like send it to them that way.
Yeah, so that's pretty much kind of what I teach is short and sweet scripts to get attention. And one of my other questions I thought about, I know we talked about this briefly, but like, how did you end up finding the show? Because guys, well, actually, let me say this. Guys, y'all don't know. Quentin probably sent me, I don't know if he sent me emails on multiple of my emails or whatever, but I ended up reading it and I was like, man, I got to get this young man on the show. And like I said, we did eventually talk and we're supposed to been do this, but technology and life been happening, or they say life has been life in. But we're finally here today. But I'm always interested in, you know, how people either even discover the show and, you know, how the show has been able to help them in their own career or even life for that matter.
So like I've been watching your show for like quite a minute. Like in 2023, like here's like a little backstory. In 2023, like I graduated and life just started happening to me. Like I had two family members that passed, and then I was working like the help job at Kennesaw State, and like leadership there was like promising me stuff, but it's just like, you know how you work somewhere and it just like be like dangling like a carrot, but you're never really gonna get that carrot, or you're gonna be like an old man by the time they give you that carrot. Mm-hmm. So in 2024, I just decided to like get my life together, and like I was typing in breaking out of like, excuse my language, I typed in how to break out of help desk hell. That's what they kind of like call it. And his channel came along, and like I was intrigued by his channel because he was like another like black another black guy that was in tech, and being a black guy in tech is like hard. Like, we only represent like 7% of like the whole entire industry. And like, when I'll be working sometimes, I'll just be watching his channel. I would just be taking his tips and stuff like that, because I was like, I'm going to find me an intersection. I don't know what it's going to be, but I'm going to find a loophole to get out this help desk, because I'm tired of like doing like password resets. I'm tired of like answering calls and stuff like that. So one day I was just like, I was already doing like, started speaking for like another organization. And I was just like, a lot of people are trying to break into tech that is autistic and stuff like that. And that's like a market that's untapped. So what I did was like, I just typed in, I couldn't find his information on YouTube for whatever reason. So I just went on Google and I typed in like tech chatter on like Google. And then like I found like his website, and I seen like two or three different emails. So I just like, okay, I'm just gonna spray and I'm gonna pray. And that's pretty much how I like came across his channel, because I just like me got his emails and stuff, because I just went over to his website and found multiple different emails, and then I just sprayed and prayed.
I mean, I know, to tell people, I'm pretty easy to kind of get in contact with. I mean, I got all those different emails. I'm always on LinkedIn. I have like a separate phone just for all that, like for people calling, text and stuff. So I'm pretty much able, like people should be able to get into contact with me and find me or whatever. But I mean, I'm glad that we did. And you know what I'm saying? Like, your story is definitely inspiring. Like, I always like to do episodes like this because, like, hey, it may not reach the masses. It may reach one person, but that one person that you helped out, it'll mean a lot to them. And so I definitely want to put your story on full display. And, you know, like, you're really rocking it right now. I think you are, what you said, you born in 1998?
Yes.
Yeah, so you are what?
I'm turning, on the end of this month, I'm turning 27.
Okay, yeah, so you're still a youngster. I say that like I'm super old, but I mean, it's, to me, it's, you know, 6 years older than you, so I feel like I'm old. But nah, man, you really have a good head on your shoulders. Seem like your parents did the right thing with you and showed you how to fight for your rights and push in. And so, like, hopefully we get to see you again later on the show or something. Like, you're progressing in your career, which we will believe that you will do. So, yeah, man. So I appreciate you for coming on, telling your story, giving the tips and the different things that you dealt with. How do the listeners or the people that are watching on YouTube, how do they contact you if they want to get in contact with you?
If you're trying to get in contact with me, you can get in touch with my IG, which is ASD_by_KAS, K-A-S. Or you guys can directly message me on LinkedIn. I'm very active on LinkedIn.
That's perfect. And I'll make sure to have those links to those social profiles in the description. And then last but not least, man, is there anything else that you want to leave the audience with?
I am also an autism activist. And I do have like a couple of projects that I am like working on right now. I'm working on like an animation to basically like bring proper representation for Black men on the spectrum. And then also I am currently working on a book, a little children's book for children that are also autistic. And I would just say that if you're trying to get into tech, you can do it. I came from like a lower income area, and I was able to not only get into tech, but I have 2 degrees, and I did this with no student debt. And If you have a dream, don't let nobody tell you cannot do your dream. The best revenge is to succeed and like keep going forward. The sky is the limit.
Nice, man. Nice, man. I know when you said that enough student debt part, somebody saying, I know that's right. man. But no, I appreciate everybody that tuned in today to the show. Like always, until next time, stay textual. We out. Peace.